Hey everyone, thanks for joining us on The Week in Review. I'm Amanda Vinicky. Americans have made their choice to make the country Trump again.
We have a country that needs help, and it needs help very badly.
The former president will return to the White House with more support in Chicago and Illinois than ever before.
Many people have told me that God spared my life for a reason. And that reason was to save our country and to restore America to greatness.
Leaving Democrats to wonder where their party went wrong. Vice President Kamala Harris assures supporters it will be okay, but encourages them to never give up.
While I concede this election, I do not concede the fight that fueled this campaign. The fight for freedom, for opportunity.
Gone is speculation about voting irregularities. She and President Joe Biden are vowing a cooperative and peaceful transition. Now come questions about what a Trump presidency will mean for Chicago and the rest of Illinois.
To anyone who intends to come take away the freedom and opportunity and dignity of Illinoisans, I would remind you that a happy warrior is still a warrior. You come for my people, you come through me.
Meanwhile, change is for certain coming to Chicago Public Schools as voters for the first time elected members of the school board. Cook County elects a new state's attorney. Members of the city council move to quickly pull the plug on the mayor's property tax hike. And a court blocks Illinois' ban on military-grade guns.
Joining us for our Week in Review panel are Sasha Ann Simons, host of WBEZ's Reset, A.D. Quigg, political reporter for the Chicago Tribune, our own Nick Blumberg, and Heather Sharon of WTTW News. Now, let's get to it, and we, of course, are going to spend the bulk of this program talking about the election, but want to begin with some breaking news that we just alluded to, and that is, Heather, a federal judge has ruled that unconstitutional Illinois' ban on so-called, or what really the state deems to be assault weapons. What can you tell us?
Well, this ruling is not going to go into effect right away. The judge in the case stayed it for 30 days, which will allow an appeal, no doubt, right away will be filed by proponents. However, the Supreme Court has vastly expanded the Second Amendment to allow more people to own more guns, including weapons that otherwise had been banned. This has always been a case that was at risk of being over. This law was always at risk of being overturned by the federal judiciary, and that has begun to happen tonight.
And in fact, the Illinois Attorney General's office did release a statement saying they are going to appeal. But Nick, just this week, we had the CPD superintendent, Larry Snelling, and also outgoing state's attorney, Kim Fox, saying that in the wake of a Chicago police officer getting shot, federal government needs to take action nationally to crack down on guns. Otherwise, this is going to continue to happen. Well, is that possible under a Trump presidency?
I think we can pretty, maybe not unequivocally, but I think we can be pretty certain that that's not likely to happen. And, you know, it's interesting. This is where, you know, two things sort of, you know, run up against one another, where the Trump, you know, the previous Trump presidency, this campaign, he and many of his surrogates have pointed to crime and violence and shootings in places like Chicago and said, these are Democrat-run places, they're not run well, people are dying in the streets. And at the same time, there are a great deal of folks on the right, including many of the Supreme Court justices that President Trump appointed, who are hostile to these types of regulations. So I don't, you know, I think this law is going to face a real existential challenge, and it is going to make it more difficult, as, you know, the state's attorney, the police superintendent say, to try and crack down on some of this violence.
I mean, once Trump said that he was going to, quote, roll back every attack on the Second Amendment that Biden put in place, we could already see what was going to come down the pike.
We have our answer. And of course, we know that Trump presidency number two may very well get to appoint more justices to the Supreme Court. And this is a case that appears to be headed for that, right?
Exactly. A very dangerous situation.
You know, let's delve really into from there the full race for president. We've had lots of prognosticating about what went right for Trump and what went wrong for Vice President Harris. So, AD, let's start with you there. What did Trump do that so resonated with the American public that he had a really resounding victory?
I am not the expert on this, and I actually don't like all of the prognosticating that happens immediately after election. I don't think it's wise. But some of the convincing things that I've seen that I would like to see more data on is that incumbents around the world have had trouble after the pandemic. This happened kind of Europe-wide. Economic interests kind of took over everything else. I think there might have also been kind of a lack of enthusiasm among Democrats. We saw some of the turnout here in Chicago drop among Democrats. I think that's only part of it. To what extent Kamala Harris being a woman, being a black woman, played into this is also something I would like more data on. But I think the prevailing wisdom right now is kitchen table issues, economic things overtook everything else.
You know, to that end, Trump and his running mate, J.D. Vance, have made big promises to the American public when it comes to their pocketbooks. Let's hear from the vice president-elect.
After the greatest political comeback in American history, we're going to lead the greatest economic comeback in American history under Donald Trump's leadership.
So, AD, let's stick with you. What can we expect from a Trump second-term presidency, particularly when it comes to fulfilling those promises to the American public?
Economic promises? I want to kick to Heather. I feel like she knows this.
Well, of course, he's promised to put tariffs on a whole lot of goods made outside the country in an attempt to sort of force manufacturers back to America. The problem with that is, as we heard over and over during the campaign, that those tariffs are likely to rise, make prices rise for everybody, whether or not it is made here in America. I think that threatens to supercharge inflation, and of course, inflation was a major issue.
Well, maybe remind people what a tariff is, because I think a lot of people... I do think
there's confusion here. So essentially a tariff is an extra charge if you bring something that was made outside America into America to be sold. It is sort of seen as, you know, from Trump as sort of paid by other countries or manufacturers outside. But it is simple supply and demand. Now, I did not major in economics, but this is, you know, pretty straightforward.
You're a good company there.
But if, you know, if it costs more to make things elsewhere, that means people who make things here have the ability to charge more. So it can just sort of like lift the entire, you know, base of prices. And that threatens to sort of undo the rollback of inflation that we've seen in recent months.
Well, and to that point, you know, we heard earlier this week from Congressman Eric Sorensen, who survived a challenge. You know, Trump has said that he wants to slap a 200% tariff on John Deere, which is headquartered, you know, here in Illinois, because he says they're sending their jobs to Mexico. They're moving more production there. To hear John Deere tell it, they're saying, look, we're not taking away from the jobs here. This is a market we can expand into, which Congressman Sorensen said he supports that. You know, he wants to see this company succeed in new markets because it then benefits Illinoisans. It's also interesting to see, you know, just how much, you know, Trump's economic visions have reshaped the GOP, because the notion that, you know, all this sort of anti-free trade talk would be coming out of the party standard bearer, not something we would have seen just, you know, a dozen years ago.
Well, and like seeing how a lot of the economic plans that Trump has are going to clash against the economic plans that Governor Pritzker has, right, that are fueled by the CHIPS Act, which I think President Trump plans to unwind, the Inflation Reduction Act, all the investments mm-hmm. Governor Pritzker wanted to make in EVs. I think that's going to be like a fundamental clash that we're going to have to watch going forward.
Promises made, promises kept, right? That was his theme the night that he won. And more so than the economy, keep in mind that folks were paying most attention to the economy and immigration. Those were the two things. Those are the ways in which he stoked our fear in large part. And so I am most interested in this mass deportation promise. Day one is when he says he's going to go ahead and, you know, start.
At least begin with criminals.
At least begin with criminals. But I think we're going to go back to the days where we saw, you know, ICE knocking on doors of restaurants and mm-hmm. so forth and literally like hauling people out. We're going to go back to those days. He wants to even revoke birthright citizenship. Like he really has a very direct plan, and he's targeting migrants and undocumented folks.
And I think it's important to mention that even if those mass deportation plans do not come to fruition, you are going to have millions of undocumented immigrants across the country and hundreds of thousands of people in Chicago essentially retreat to the shadows. They will not call the police. They will not seek health care. They will not avail themselves of the services that they are entitled to for fear of being identified as an undocumented immigrant and put at risk of deportation. And that threatens to rip apart families that have deep, deep roots in Chicago, and I think will have a profound impact on neighborhoods like Little Village and Pilsen, and I think it could potentially have dramatic economic consequences.
Absolutely.
For
yes.
Chicago, because there are plenty of jobs that are done by undocumented immigrants and people who might not have clear citizenship status that American citizens refuse to do at any wage level. And I think that it is impossible to overstate just how terrified people are, and I think that they are more terrified because they remember being terrified back in 2017. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is going to be a real point of conflict between the city of Chicago and potentially the federal government.
And not just, I think, retreating to the shadows in Chicago and having an economic impact within the city, but really throughout the country, including the rest of Illinois, where you have a lot of farm workers that yes. are dependent on undocumented immigrants. To that end, let's hear from Governor J.B. Pritzker, who says that Illinois has made preparations in case there is a change in tone, as he called it, in Washington, so it will be able to fend off what he called an attack on the state's residents.
There are many people whose lives and livelihoods are at risk, and there are many people who cried at the result because they know what impact it may have on their families. So think about them.
So, Nick, he said that Illinois is contemplating what else it can do after taking all of these actions previously to sort of safeguard or Trump-proof the state. What is he talking about? What are the options?
Well, in large part, they're limited by the federal government's power. You know, there have been a number of efforts, you know, all this year, expanding, reproductive rights coverage under insurance plans. You know, they've made a lot of moves. You know, there's been talk about should Illinois try to enshrine abortion rights in the state's constitution. You know, I think that's going to be a big focus for Pritzker and a lot of lawmakers. Obviously, Pritzker has put a lot of his own money and efforts into, national efforts to shore up reproductive rights. But if you have, a Congress and a federal judiciary that is, hostile to those sorts of state-level efforts, that's going to pose huge challenges, and they, likely, depending on what the action is, may be insurmountable.
Well, Amanda and I did a lot of reporting on this during the Democratic National Convention. We asked Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton, was it a mistake for Illinois not to put a constitutional amendment enshrining reproductive rights in Illinois' constitution? I think that is a very open question at this point, because will Illinois be able to do that in 2 years? I mean, maybe. What will happen to women if Trump doesn't pursue a federal abortion ban but seeks to outlaw the mailing of the abortion pill, or in other ways tries to prevent women from traveling to Illinois to obtain reproductive rights care? And we haven't even mentioned the rights of LGBTQ people who have traveled to Illinois as sort of a safe haven to get the care that they need. I think there are a lot of questions about what Governor Pritzker's, he said he's a happy warrior, what he has limited power under sort of the federalism sort of system of our country. And I think that while many people found his, I think, remarks reassuring, he understands his power is limited.
Well, as we've seen, more and more restrictions in states surrounding ours, of course, we're going to see now that Trump is leaving all jurisdiction up to the states, we're going to see that increase. Does Illinois have the capacity to take on more people coming into our state? Do we have the staff? Are we going to have enough resources? Are we going to get the federal money that we need to be able to continue being that safe haven? That's a question that's on the top of my mind.
Yeah, and I think the capacity question is really key, as not just with reproductive health care, but with gender affirming health care, with trans young people. This is not a quick process. You hear a lot of this about from folks, particularly on the far right, saying, oh, you just sort of snap your fingers and all of a sudden, your son becomes a daughter. That's simply not the way that it works. It is a years-long, very intensive process. There's a lot of mental health care as well as physical health care that goes into it. So, it's not necessarily quite as, I don't want to use the word simple to diminish something like an abortion, but you can come to the state, you can have have the procedure that you need to have done. With something like gender affirming care, it's not that easy.
Long term.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that I don't really understand, because there's not enough data, there were many states, including Arizona, that voted for Trump but also enshrined abortion rights into their constitution, and it's not clear to me sort of what that sort of delta, you know, is between people who thought, well, let me protect abortion rights, but also let me vote to return the man who appointed the justices that overturned Roe versus Wade to the presidency. I think there are a lot of questions about how voters came to that decision, and I think that's one of the fundamental questions that I'll be looking to understand in the weeks ahead.
So many questions. One that I have for you, Sasha Ann, is we've talked about sort of what Illinois may do to, again, safeguard itself from a Trump presidency, but what is at stake potentially when it comes to grants, projects? Or is there anything on the horizon that we should be keying into?
I will kick that over to Heather.
I can even take it if you
want. I will kick that over to the state reporters.
So, yeah. One thing everyone is concerned about is, will there be continued funding for the Red Line extension?
Oh, yes.
That's like one of the most visible federal projects that we all have in mind. At budget hearings this week, city officials basically said that money flowed during the last Trump administration. We expect it to keep flowing now, but there are other things on the list.
Well, you know, I think that the real question is, will the federal government attempt again under a Trump administration to leverage the federal grants that the city relies on to run its day-to-day operations to force changes in policy? I think that we saw during the first administration that, you know, they wanted Chicago to stop being a self-proclaimed sanctuary city, and they attempted...
So
they attempted to yank back millions in public safety grants, which I always have to point out would have amounted to a defunding of the Chicago Police Department, but failed. And there is a Supreme Court decision on the books that will prevent that. However, just like we saw Texas Governor Greg Abbott sort of leverage the city's status as a sanctuary city far more effectively than Trump did, they are going to try again. The only question is how, and will it be successful, especially now that we've spent 2 years sort of riven by sort of the migrant crisis and sort of how deeply it's sort of strained the city's safety net.
Right. And with projects, we should mention the O'Hare expansion, too.
I mean, to AD's point about, you know, are they going to be trying to take away some, you know, particularly with something like transit, you know, the Trump, administration, future Trump administration transition team swears up and down that Project 2025 is not their vision. But, you know, just speaking to that Red Line extension, I did go and read the sort of the section on the U.S. Department of Transportation in that document, which I should add was, you know, drafted by a former Trump administration official, and basically said, yeah, we've tried to get rid of some of these grant programs in the previous administration. They've got a lot of support on Capitol Hill.
Yep.
So I think that might be one of the backstops, even with Republican members, you know, even if the Republicans do, as is, you know, currently looking like more likely, take full control of Congress. There are members who see these programs and say, wait a minute, this is something that benefits folks back home. So that can slow some of that down, but, you know, certainly not stop it entirely.
Yeah. And there's there's backdoor ways to curtail a lot of the programs that Trump cares about, or ones that he seeks to protect, but also wants to do something else that would defund it. So like applying, giving people a break on payroll taxes has an effect on Medicare. So I think in enacting tax cuts to the degree that the president wants, is going to leave a lot less funding for a lot of other things that will eventually trickle down to Illinois and Chicago.
And the governor has said, when asked about this, that he believes that there are legal protections for grants, that they can't be fully politicized, but that, of course, would be left to a court system that is, again, going to be, it seems more likely, more in complete control of
Republicans. Right, and like all the regulatory stuff under Chevron, like, that could all change, too, and that's not like direct grant funding, but that is how, like, the system of government works, and the breakdown in that, I think, We have no idea what could happen.
What about the impact of losing clout in D.C.? Sasha Ann.
I mean, that too. Again, Chicago is on the map right now. And Trump, I hate to say it, he doesn't like our city.
No, he doesn't like our city.
He doesn't like our state. And so, you know, everything turning red in the White House is just not looking good for the state of Illinois.
And what do we make, therefore, of Trump making gains within the city and the state, statewide? Previously, Presidents Biden and Secretary of State Clinton had earned about 17 percentage points more than Trump in 16 and 20, and it's about 8% now. What do you make of that? What has changed?
I was shocked. I mean, again, just adding to the stats that you just shared, Amanda, like we as a city voted for, Trump in 2020 at 12%. And this time around, it was 20%. And so that's a drastic jump. And then when you zoom into the neighborhoods and you look at places like Little Village, which you could argue is like the Mexico of the Midwest, and see how much that shift has, you know, they've shifted to the right. And we just talked about immigration and mass deportations and the migrant crisis that is flowing through this sanctuary city. So I'm still trying to wrap my mind around how we get here, how we get to a place where we shift red.
Yeah, there are still almost 90,000 ballots that have yet to be counted. So I think it is premature to sort of draw sort of sweeping conclusions from the results, because we do know that these late arriving ballots are more likely to be more progressive and more Democratic, given the pattern that we've seen in previous elections. But there's no doubt that there has been sort of a shift red. I think the question is, how big was that shift, and sort of why did people make that shift?
What's the appeal?
Or was it that people did not come out and vote? Because we've seen, there's no doubt that voter turnout will be much lower for the 2024 election than the 2020 election. So that means in Chicago, you're talking primarily about Democratic voters not going to vote. And I will again sort of caution us all in the news media, there was a lot of coverage about the long lines outside early voting places and long lines. It was a long ballot with a lot of judges that you had to look up.
Pages. Yeah.
And
pages.
It seems every election we sort of have this sort of surge of like, oh, everybody's voting, everybody's sort of what, and it never quite materialized. And along with sort of the change in voting patterns, I think it behooves us all to sort of take a deep breath and sort of, you know, focus on the facts and not the vibes.
If everyone thinks that it's all been taken care of, that's why we see on election day, there are no lines,
yes.
Right? Traditionally.
Yeah, and I think, you know, whatever comes of the analysis, once we have more data, once we have more time to sort of parse what happened, I think it does just point in general to greater volatility within the electorate in terms of who people support, the ways in which they split their ticket. You know, you saw in North Carolina a Trump win, but, you know, a Democrat elected governor. Now, of course, he was running against a very troubled, shall we say, opponent on the Republican side. But, you know, looking at things like that, looking at places like Arizona, you know, I think it's going to be a lot harder to predict and prognosticate, at least in, you know, the near term, of how folks are going to vote.
Yeah. A week ago, if you had told me that Arizona was going to be likely to elect a Democratic senator, Michigan was going to elect a Democratic senator, Wisconsin was going to elect a Democratic senator, we don't know about Pennsylvania, but that Trump would carry all of those swing states, I would have said, I mean, maybe, but not likely, but that's what happened, and I think we have to figure out sort of why we've seen a return to ticket splitting.
Illinois stands alone on the map in a sea of red.
Yes.
I'm interested in if this, like, translates in some way to the Democratic Party of Illinois or local elected officials shifting their messaging about what they care about the most to try to adjust to whatever we do ultimately find out from the data. Like, are we going to see shifts in what elected officials say they care about as a result of this election?
Well, to that end, so let's talk about that. The mayor is proposing this $300 million property tax increase. Is this focus on economics that seems to be the takeaway from this election going to hurt his bid for that? We're already seeing pushback from the city council.
I mean, like, aldermen have, from the beginning of time, hated property tax increases. So part of that is probably nothing new.
Let alone you make it $300 million.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the other part of this is that he has a really contentious relationship with the council right now, and they actually feel emboldened in a way that they probably hadn't in previous administrations to push back. But I think there are going to be aldermen that say, look at the results of this election. The people want more money in their pockets, and we can't do that if we raise property taxes.
And a big hearing on that on Wednesday coming up. So let's focus a little bit more on the elections locally, because we've only got about a minute or so left. CPS School Board, first time that we have folks that are elected to it. Was this a proxy battle between Mayor Johnson and charter schools, the CTU and anti-union?
Yeah, absolutely.
Sasha Ann?
I was surprised. The CTU-backed candidates didn't do as well as I thought they would. The independents soared, like, you know, surged to the top. Shout out to Che Rheinfest-Smith, who won his race today. But, yeah.
30 seconds, Heather.
Well, I think it's an interesting argument that, like, not everything is going to boil down in clear ideological lines, because a lot of the independents who won had backing from established political establishments, especially in the 47th Ward, and you had a lot of people who had sort of deep education resumes, so that might have been convincing as opposed to people who were not quite as experienced in education.
And we will have to leave it there. Our post-2024 election show is out of time. Our thanks to Sasha Ann Simons, A.D. Quigg, Nick Blumberg and Heather Sharone. We will be back to wrap things up right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation. Additional support is provided by
And that is our show for this Friday night after a long election week. Check out our website to catch up on anything you may have missed. Lots of election material there, but other stories too. You can also find locations for where you can smash your old jack-o'-lanterns this weekend. It's much better for the environment that way and fun. Now, for the week in review, I'm Amanda Vinicky. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe. Have a good night. Take any potential rage out on those pumpkins. AD, I want to go to you because you covered the state's attorney race, Kim Fox not running for re-election. Eileen O'Neill Burke easily defeated the Republican in this race.
Yeah, the real race was the March primary, and that was a squeaker like I have not really seen on a countywide scale. Very close, and a lot of people kind of read into that. Do Democrats want a tougher on crime type return to ordinary prosecutorial like hard-charging person, or do they want a continuation of what Kim Fox fought for, which was like criminal justice reform and being reflective about the racial impacts of the criminal justice system? Eileen O'Neill Burke wins out slightly, and it's Cook County, so off to the races she ran.
You spoke with O'Neill Burke.
Yeah, spoke with O'Neill Burke, her top priority, gun crime, and wanting to uphold the safety.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a personal injury law firm committed to giving back to the community through law and philanthropy.